In with their weekly analysis of developments leading to the November election are Nate Bauer, director of UA Press, and UAF political scientist Alexander Hirsch. This week, the Black Lives Matter protests.
I have a question about whether or not what we're seeing, what we're witnessing is an event or a movement. I mean, you mentioned the Black Lives Matter movement, and this is clearly a kind of continuation of an ongoing social movement. But this particular series of events seems to have taken on kind of a more expansive character in the sense that I think a Black Lives Matter is originating with the death of Michael Brown and Ferguson. And I think what we're seeing now is a far more widespread phenomenon where there's sort of rebellious kind of uprising potential, at least in dozens of cities. So I think that what we're seeing is an event that's taken on sort of a national quality. But whether or not this present circumstance will galvanize into a full-fledged movement that leads to, for instance, policy outcomes, to me, that's a signature of a movement, that it has not just effects on culture, but it has full-fledged legal pro forma political impacts as well. It seems yet to be seen here, but I wonder if, Nate, if you're seeing the potential for that to happen, and if so, if you expect that to have significant consequence for the November election.
Yeah, those are great questions, Alex. I think just this morning, there were members of the House of Representatives and committees that said that they were planning on introducing new legislation with all of this stuff in mind by the end of the month. I think that those are good metrics. It's also interesting if the wave of protests that we've been seeing for the last week or so, if there's national coverage basically every day and every night of these protests in every American city, that also begets passion about it. I think it means more people care about it because there's more coverage. I mean, these are ostensibly responses to police violence, and there's obviously been plenty more coverage of police violence at the protests themselves. And so, you know, in comparison to the pandemic, I think this does seem like it's taken on more immediate and urgent concerns, and it will either dissipate or gain, you know, further, I think, legitimacy in the form of official responses, policies, and planks in the platforms of one or both of the major political parties between now and November. I think that there's just so much uncertainty. You know, this is a common refrain for us, but in 2020, it seems like that's the name of the game. I wonder, as it manifests in our political system, both COVID and Black Lives Matter and George Floyd's death, I think, which is sort of the focus point for the current protests. I wonder, one framing device that we've used in our discussions here before is this notion of federalism and anti-federalism. And I think that we've even traced the current binary political system that we have in the US back all the way to those ideas of, you know, concentration of power at the federal level versus authorities in the forms of the states. Those ideas have reared their heads in regard to both COVID and to the protests against police violence. You know, sometimes it's hard to tell who's on the federalist side and who's on the anti-federalist side when it comes to like official government responses to these things.
You know, the other thing I would note, you know, right now, as of this recording, which is on June 3rd, there is an active live debate over the meaning of violence. Right, so is property destruction violence, or is violence only for moral injury against persons? Right, only against direct moral injury against persons who can suffer pain. What I'm noticing is an interesting debate, and it, of course, polarization. It's filtered through polarization, and we're seeing that in the outcome of the debate. But you know, in looking back at modern history, there are some interesting things to notice. For instance, after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, you saw rioting in over 100 American cities. And as a result, there was about $50 million in property damage. And on the sixth day of the riots, the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1968. So, you know, I mentioned that because what I noticed in the debate over what is violence, right, which is an interesting debate, but what I notice is that there's this kind of persistent view that rioting can lead to nowhere political, that it is merely a kind of emotional outburst of chaotic feelings and chaotic energies that can have no sort of legal consequence that can bring about some kind of social good. But I don't think that bears out in history. So it's always good, I think, to keep an eye on where are the historical precedents, because it helps us in this time of uncertainty, in this time of precarity, it helps to give us some kind of guiding light. Just to go back to the question of whether or not a social movement like this might have some kind of effect on the election in November. Earlier, I was suggesting that perhaps there's reason to believe that it won't, insofar as social movements perhaps have become themselves siloed in our age of heightened polarization. But I think that there's a reason to suspect that I'm wrong about that. And that reason can be seen in the fact that Joe Biden, who is the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party, more than presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party, he was very much nominated through the primary process by Black voters in South Carolina. I mean, they're kind of the pivot point, right? That particular constituency, you could argue, is the pivot point for his nomination. Well, if that's true, then perhaps it's fair to expect that Black voter turnout could be very, very high in November in support of Biden's presidency. If that's the case, then that would be an important indicator that he would have a very good chance in the Electoral College of being elected. And, you know, you could look at the difference between, for instance, 2012 versus 2016, right? In 2012, you see Obama is reelected, and you go back even further, 2008, when he was first elected, compare the kind of demographics in the Electoral College that support an Electoral College victory for Obama in both those instances versus Hillary Clinton, who runs in 2016, its Black voters are a huge difference. So Black voters overwhelmingly vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016, but voter turnout amongst Black voters it drops off compared to the 2008-2012. So there's a lot of scholarship in political science on this, and it's interesting to note, but African Americans are very much what political scientists call a captured electorate, in the sense that it's over 90% of African Americans are Democratic voters. It's like 93%, which is much higher than any other ethnic or racial demographic by far. And so if this moment, this kind of spark of a moment in support of George Floyd leads to something that will shape the election, I expect it will have to do with Black voter turnout. You know, or at least that's the question that I would want to see answered if I was going to try to anticipate something.
Yeah, well, I do think that turnout seems to be like one of the factors, actually one of the relatively few factors that remains uncertain. You know, I was just reading today, again, it's the middle of the week. There's a Monmouth poll that came out this morning that showed, and Monmouth is an A-plus rated pollster, it is just one poll, so the common response is that you know you shouldn't put too much stock in a single poll. But the Monmouth poll from this morning showed Biden up by 11, 52 to 41. And that would not be that notable, except for the fact, I was reading some other information, that Biden's lead, it's not a huge lead, and on average, I think it's like a 6-point lead if you look at the polling differences between January and now. On average, it's a 6-point lead, but it's remarkably steady. In fact, they've been polling even before the Democratic primaries. They've been polling Joe Biden versus Donald Trump as a matchup since, I think, like January of 2019. And the polls have been remarkably consistent. I mean, they've showed about an average of a 6-point lead since January of last year. And I think that that's actually historically notable. I think it's the steadiest, what's called the steadiest lead over that much time that's on record, like since they started doing those kind of polls. You know, obviously 2020 is a volatile year. A lot of things have happened already, and we're not even halfway through it yet. And there's still a significant amount of time between now and November. So things could change. And especially considering that, again, the lead that Joe Biden seems to have in the polls over Donald Trump doesn't seem by comparison all that big compared to other races in the past, but it does seem, again, like historically like steady. So turnout is one of the things that it seems like the election will hinge on, and turnout among, you know, particular demographic groups. And that actually might be one of the things that is affected most by current events. Rather than nationwide opinions, if you survey like every person or even likely or registered voters, you might get one answer and then it will come down, you know, the results will come down to how many and which types of people turn out to vote. And of course, that will also be affected by what the like practical technical details of the election even looks like. We don't know what the process of voting is going to be like in November. And it's obviously going to vary by state and maybe even by community. So those are all big open questions. And I think that they will definitely be affected by current events, by COVID-19, by protests and the government's response to those protests, and obviously the behavior and actions of the candidates.
Nate Bauer directs UA Press. Alexander Hirsch is political science professor at UAF.